This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 289, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners like you.
It's so hot, I put my L arm on the comic and the cover came up, stuck to my skin.
I have other things to fill.
Wow, you never start with hot.
No, but dude.
Take what is yours and I'll take mine. Now let me at the truth, which will refresh my broken mind. So tie me to a post and block my ears. I can see where those orphans threw my tears. And know my cold despite my faults and despite my growing fears. But I will hold on hope and I won't let you choke on the noose around your neck. And I'll find strength.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 289. My name is Connor Kilpatrick and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
What's up?
And Ron Richards.
You're back. They let you out.
Bail laws are surprisingly lax in Mexico.
Oh, thank God.
You've got me for a little while until I have to go back for the trial. At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one, writes about it on the website, talk about the podcast.
Don't go back there.
I'm going to go back to Mexico, okay? Sorry.
They said, my lawyer said everything would be fine, okay?
Why is Mark Wahlberg here? I'm not sure what he said. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show. There'll be spoilers for the books we talk about. So if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show, come back. We don't want to ruin the books for you. We don't want to get the emails complaining. We don't want just to deal with it at the end of the day.
You really sound like you took some time off.
This week, Ron.
Yes.
Ron had the pick.
I had the pick. And it was a healthy week. But ultimately, when it came down to it, the old-fashioned comic book and styles of Robert Kirkman and Ryan Otley won me over with Invincible number 80 as the pick of the week.
At first, I was surprised. And then I had just finished reading it. I was like, you know, no, I'm not surprised. That's
Well, it's funny because it's like at first, on a visceral level, it got me. Because, of course, I mean, we've raved about Invincible, I mean, so much over the years. And so yes. Nothing I'm going to say now, well, maybe something I'm going to say now is new to that conversation. But we've raved about both Kirkman's writing as well as Otley's art. And it's just amazing. And like the immediate emotional reaction from this book was like, I just had so much fun reading it. Like there was like six scenes in it. There was a lot of character development, like, you know, kind of personal relationship movement. There was a big action sequence. There was a couple of laugh out loud moments. And like when I finished the comic, it was one of those, wow, I had a lot of fun reading that book. That's a contender. And then as I was going through my stack and I really started thinking about Invincible, I was looking at it. And from a technical level, that's when it was like kind of like, oh, we're through the looking glass.
When you notice the 16-panel, I was using 16-panel grids again.
Yes, ooh. Exactly. Like to see the whole first, you know, the majority of the first half of the book based on a 16-panel grid, which is not easy to do because that's a lot of small space.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And what Otley was able to do with that was able to and that doesn't mean that every page is 16 panels. Like some panels, there's one panel that spans the four columns, but it's still a 16 panel grid.
It fits in that grid, like in Watchmen, they fit in a 9-panel grid.
Yeah, exactly. And what I really noticed about that, what really got me, was Otley's use of that space And, you know, from a story development standpoint and from a character development standpoint, like I said, there are six scenes. You had a lot of stuff going on. You have Invincible's parents decide to get back together and take off for space. So that happened.
And they were only in it for like a page or so, but it was really good acting on that page. Like, if you just read their facial expressions, you kind of could tell what was going on even without the dialogue. And I really liked that.
Right. And Otley, he was moving back and forth between like close-ups and medium shots to, you know, to express that emotion, and got a rather complicated situation across in one page, which I thought was really interesting. But then, you know, that leaves Invincible Mark and Adam Eve to kind of inherit his parents' house, and they move in there, and you've got the underlying tension of their relationship based off the big reveal from last issue where Adam Eve had the abortion and all that sort of stuff. So you totally can feel that in each of those panels, you know, like when they're sleeping together, like that. I was like, oh, chilly. But then what really got me was the next sequence which I'm not really sure why this is in here other than just to do this, and it's probably going to play a role later in the story, but Invincible goes to visit his buddy William and finds out that he's gay. And I thought it was a very realistic, good scene of telling that kind of story. But what I thought was interesting was his use of space. You know, that one panel on the right-facing page where it's a long shot of Invincible sitting in the chair. When he kind of finds out about it, like, I thought that was the right, like, zoom in, zoom out kind of use of it. And I was like, wow, that's really, really impressive. Then, you know, that the story moves on, and Invincible's flying around, and he sees a dude with big gloves and boots walking on the side of a building, and turns out it's some
great scene.
Yeah, some low-level criminal who robbed the bank to try to earn enough money to propose to his girlfriend. And as opposed to beating him up or turning, like, the guy realizes he's sunk, and so he just surrenders. And then Invincible's like, why are you doing this? And they have this conversation that is not only hysterical, but exemplifies Kirkman's take on modern superhero stories, if you ask me.
And you know, the other side of it is, I kept thinking, I'm like, well, is this going to turn out like Spider-Man? Is this guy going to go kill somebody? And I was like, you know what? I don't think it is. I think it's just, it's like, dude, just stop. You're being stupid. And the guy's like, you know what? You're right. Yeah. And I just, you wish you could talk to people like that.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So I thought that was great. And then this little mini scene of Mark going to the comic book store to get his comics with a very oddly prescient joke in there about companies rebooting their titles at number ones, which I know he was digging at Marvel at the time, but with everything that's happened with DC, the joke just worked that much more.
He got lucky.
Yeah, he definitely got lucky. But what I think is also great is they also poked fun at themselves, where, like, Invincible's getting his comics and he's got a ton of Science Dogs, and the guy's saying that the Science Dog creators challenge themselves to put out an issue every month, you know, like, and it's what Kirkman and Otley did, which I thought was funny. So that was kind of good. And then, you know, it all leads into a big action sequence where he fights Dinosaurus in Las Vegas. And again, it's an example of Kirkman going left when you think he's going to go right. In that, you know, it's a kind of a very typical, you know, Invincible flies in, fights the villain. The villain, you know, explains what he's doing, why he's doing it, and it's the Magneto-esque, I'm doing this for a greater good kind of thing. And I need to destroy the city. And he's like, I planted a bomb, and Invincible whooshes off like the Flash and comes back with the bomb. And the guy goes, yeah, you're supposed to find that. But there are 50 others, and I'm probably not going to survive this explosion, but oh well. And then he blows up Vegas.
Vaporizes Invincible's costume. And when that happened, I was like, all right, this is Robert Kirkman. And we're so ingrained to think about stuff the way that Marvel and DC do it, that there's no consequence, there's no anything. But, you know, with this, you're just like, wow.
Yeah. And that's what kind of made me realize that also, that this issue isn't as a jumping on point for new readers. This issue isn't the third chapter of a six, you know, issue arc. This reminded me of reading X-Men back in the early 200s of the issues, where it just was an issue. Mm-hmm. And shit happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, the characters' relationships moved forward and things blew up and there were fights and there were consequences and it laid groundwork for future stuff. And I thought it was really interesting to take that, you know, almost like 80s style comic book storytelling, issue by issue storytelling, and apply it with the modern themes and the modern approaches he does. And just an example of why Invincible is, like the cover says, the best superhero comic in the universe.
Which is just a takeoff on what was on the Fantastic Four.
No,
for
I know.
Those of you who don't know. I'm not telling you. You know. You know, I think as I was reading this, I started to be reminded of, because I feel like Kirkman's titles have been sort of in a sort of mini event mode for a while. So this has sort of shifted us back to regular life, which is also sort of going to be happening over in Walking Dead. And one of the things that I always liked about his books is that with the scene with, I forget the dude's name, but his old roommate, the gay guy.
William.
Like he just it was just like, here's this. Like, he just slaps it out there. It's not like a long, drawn-out thing. There wasn't hints at it for issues or anything. It was like, this is how it is now.
Yep.
And you just go with it, and he deals with that, which is good.
Which is funny, because we're going to revisit that when we talk about Avengers, because I have that in relation to Fear itself.
Then finally, the one other thing, probably a couple of weeks ago, Otley tweeted out the cover for this issue, and I remember seeing that cover and going, God, seriously, Ryan Otley.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
How good is this guy? And we you know, we've never seen him do anything else other than Invincible. I mean, he did like a couple of little minis here and there that he created, but it's just because he's been able to focus on this one thing for so long, and there's sort of relative security with it, and he doesn't sound like he's going anywhere. Like, he's just gotten so good at doing this job. Whereas some people get bored with doing one job and they sort of like, you know, hack it after a while. Like, he just keeps getting better and pushing himself. And I love looking at these pages and those covers. They're so much fun.
Yep. Totally good. So, yeah. So without a doubt, no doubt was my pick of the week, because it was just so much fun to read. And it was just an example of why 80 issues in, I love this book.
It's a good run.
Yeah, it was a good run. So did anybody give the new Alpha Flight a chance other than me?
I did.
You did. What did you think of it?
It was fun.
Yeah,
it was solid. It was about as solid as you can get at a comic book.
Yeah, exactly. Solid Marvel. You know what I would expect from Alpha Flight. I thought Eaglesham was good, except towards the end there was a couple pages where there was a couple like panels that were a little wonky.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah, right. You know the ones I'm talking about, right?
There's a couple. There's a couple of stuff from him where it was like vintage Eaglesham. The two page shot of the wave hitting the city with the guy riding in on the creature.
Yep.
And where it just feels like, I guess he wasn't riding on a creature, he was just on the water.
Yeah.
It just looked like Eaglesham from the classic.
It was mainly the pages with Northstar's boyfriend. Like there's that one panel where he's on the phone.
He's on the phone, yep.
I was like, oh, is that Eaglesham really? Like, yeah, it didn't
look like him at all.
Who wrote this?
Fred Van Lente and Greg Peck.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I mean, it's solid. It's one of the hammer wielding bad guys attacks.
Canada.
Ottawa, Canada, whatever. Yeah. Whatever city it is. Vancouver, actually.
Yeah.
Ironically enough. and so the Alpha Flight responds, and it's the classic Alpha Flight team minus Puck and North Star, but that sort of is dealt with through the story. And I like Alpha Flight. I don't know why. I have no real reason to.
There's something about them that's charming.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know if it's like, oh, look, Canada's got superheroes. If it's that kind of looking, I'm sorry, Canadians.
That's so patronizing.
I know. That's why I'm apologizing. But there's something about Alpha Flight and the fact that it like touches a little bit on the X-Men. It touches a little bit on the Hulk. It touches a little bit on the Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, like the John Byrne run was amazing back in the day. And there's something about these characters that are endearing, and I'm glad to see them kind of back. And I got to admit, Atuma or Necrod or whatever, that tidal wave page looked awesome.
There's something nice about seeing non-American. Captain Britain and MIF-13 was fun in the same way. It was different characters in a different setting with different people. The only difference there being that was written by an actual Brit, where this is written by two Americans. So I don't know how.
Well, it's drawn by Canadians, so.
Yeah, I don't know how authentic the writing and the dialogue is, but it was fun. It's a solid action Marvel book, like you said. So
like, it really almost felt as if Alpha Flight never went out of print. Like, this team never went on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you pick back up, and it just, like, Pack and Van Lente have the characters down. You know, I think the North Star Aurora relationship was one that really kind of stood out, and as well as the Vindicator and the Guardian. You know, those relationships were great. I love the little scene with Marina and Vindicator about her catchphrase. Die Earth Scum and then Die Human Scum. Like, there were little laughs, and it was I mean, it was what I would want from an Alpha Flight comic, so I enjoyed it. I hope it gets the green light to be an ongoing, because I think the world needs this Alpha Flight team.
Now Vancouver does.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I've never read Alpha Flight like in any way, so like it just doesn't end up on Alpha Flight. Like, it doesn't end up on my radar.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Tragedy of tragedies, we got the news recently that Northlanders is going to end with issue 50, and
That's a good run.
It's a great run. The long run. Yeah, exactly. But it was that much more of a bitter pill after reading issue number 41 this week with beautiful art by Marion Churchland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just beautiful.
Yeah. I really like this issue. I really like the characterization, but I think there needed to be a little bit of clarification between the flashback part and the present part, like when they were switching time frames.
All right.
That's just my one criticism of that. I really enjoyed the characterization of it. And I love the question of this, which I think is very related to Game of Thrones right now.
Yes, actually. So, yeah. Which, so by the way, holy crap.
That's a whole show. But
yeah.
Oh, God. Like, literally, Peter Dinklage for whatever the highest Emmy or whatever they can
get. Well, not
get
even it. That, but the last,
just because.
The last episode, my God.
Yeah.
Oh my! Yeah. God. I literally gasped.
I know.
By the way, because then
comic show's off. Let's do this.
A quick tangent on Game of Thrones. So, like, I haven't read the books, and I'm watching the show, and I don't know if I'll go back and read the books, but I got really curious. So I went to Wikipedia and read all the synopses of all the books to see what the story is, just because I was curious. And that book is just full of crazy people.
All right, let's not talk anymore about things we haven't read.
Oh no, but I'm just saying, literally every person in that book is crazy.
Yes,
so, yeah. So
it's like a Kirkman show.
It really is. Northlanders 41. I see that criticism. I can see that, but the book. I mean, another, you know, like the single issue one and done kind of, and I just love Marion's art, so it was great.
I really liked the three page sequence at the beginning. I liked the. It was very tactile, like when they, like even the sound effects for her running towards him, pet, 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 like you were there.
Yeah.
You could hear it. There was the dialogue didn't tell the story. The sound effects and the panels did. And books don't do that a whole lot.
Yeah.
I don't think now. I don't see it. And I really liked it. It was just you were there just a little bit. And I think it's one of the things that's good about this book is it's very subtle. And I think that sort of actually plays into that criticism I had a little bit. Sometimes you have to work a little harder to follow it because he's not spoon-feeding you everything. There's no narration. There's none of that. You're thrown into it, and then you go away from it before you've necessarily got a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
But it's been getting better, which is sort of sad that it's going away. But man, he's going to leave on a high note. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Connor, you're the last Avengers issue you made pick of the week, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
it was. I don't know which title's which.
Avengers number 13 with all the interviews
right,
and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Avengers 14 continued that kind of meme, but layered it into the telling the Avengers participation in Fear itself with John Romita Jr. on art this time as opposed to Bocello. And the point I was going to make earlier when we talked about Kirkman, there was one page where they summarized what's been happening in Fear itself. That I thought was more effective than the first three issues of Fear Itself completely.
Well, that's what I said about 13 was that it did a better job of making Fear Itself seem important and interesting and exciting than the book itself has.
Exactly.
That's what Avengers has been doing. I thought this was a showcase for Romita.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of double page spreads in here, and this is some of the best Romita work I've seen in a while.
Maybe that action sequence was amazing.
I also liked the way they colored the evil thing. Yep. Where it was sort of like negative thing, where the orange was the highlight and the dark part was the color.
Yeah.
It was a really good looking book. I didn't think it was as good as 13. I thought the emotional beats weren't there, but in terms of pure action and the just big Romita action panels, it was fantastic.
So is Red Hulk dead too?
No.
How could that be? Because at the end, when Jarvis says we never saw him again.
Yeah, I think that's probably we didn't see him again.
As an Avenger? Day. Yeah.
No. I don't think.
Before lunch. They just left that out. Letter of mistake.
Yeah, but this was really, really good, and I think it just really like it to me. It kind of punctuated where Fear itself is kind of falling through the cracks for me in terms of that a sense of what is the point.
I still don't know really what the point is.
No, neither
with
do
these
I.
Tie-in issues, but it does a better job of setting the stage for the stakes and and the fact that these exciting things are happening, which is not happening in Fear itself. But I still don't understand quite the point of it.
Yeah. And I also liked when Wolverine said, hey, Captain America says the guy's an Avenger, then the guy's an Avenger. The end.
Yes. Also, the great cover by Alan Davis.
Yeah, really great cover by Alan. Why is Spidey in his FF costume?
Who knows? It just doesn't
make any sense.
He didn't have time to make it across town to his store's locked to change, so he just decided to show up.
He had to stop in and teach, and then he had a consulting gig, and then he had to go to the thing. Does he still do all that?
No.
He should. It's a good joke. I really wish that would come back, because it just would keep giving.
It's fine. The joke of keeping his stuff across town in a locker is
good enough. Yeah, exactly.
Way over on 11th Avenue.
But I'm on 3rd.
You know how hard it is to get across town in Manhattan quickly?
2 o'clock.
2:30. Yeah.
Those blocks are really long.
You're not kidding. And after 9th, it's just nothing. Can't swing in a building that's 3 stories tall.
All right, so over in DC at the Flashpoint, our weekly kind of Flashpoint check-in, which we'll be stopping after the first wave of this, right?
Yeah, next week is it. We'll talk about the ones we want to after that.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let's start first with. I assume Connor, did you get any of them or all of them?
I got all. I'm getting all. I'm trying all of them.
Me too. All right,
I'm not necessarily continuing all of them.
I am continuing with my average of one per week. If you'd like to guess which one.
I will guess you went with Dead Man and the Flying Graysons.
Connor?
I'm going to guess Wonder Woman.
No, Grodd. You went with Grodd.
I went with Grodd.
Yes, excellent. All right. Well, we'll get to Grodd in a moment. So starting with Dead Man and the Flying Graysons, JT Krule, Michael Janine, Connor, what did you think of Dead Man and the Flying Graysons? An amazing Cliff Chang cover.
Great cover. I enjoyed this one. The art was sort of reminiscent of Fraser Irving's art.
Yep.
You know, it's not a complicated story. It's the Haley Circus, which includes Dead Man and the Flying Graysons traveling around Europe trying to perform and make a living while the whole world is in the war between the Atlanteans and the Themyscirans. It was really solid. I thought it was good.
I thought it was very, very solid. I thought it was good. I didn't love the art. It's not my favorite kind of style, but I'm intrigued. I love Dead Man, so I think I'm going to stick with it.
Dr. Fate's there. He's there, sort of freak show soothsayer, and he's kind of seen that this world is wrong. He sees that there's another world out there that should be happening but isn't. And then the Amazonians are hunting for the helmet of Naboo. So I thought this was a really just solid, good comic.
Yeah.
It has an interesting cliffhanger. There's interesting subplots going on. Something bad might be happening to Dick Grayson. In this world, maybe Dick will die and the parents will live. We'll find out.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it quite a bit.
So there was one story point I was confused about when they were putting together the new campground in Poland and mm-hmm. then the Justice League played basketball.
What?
In the subway comic in the middle of it?
Let's talk about that separately. Let's get to that later.
At least the Super 8 comic had some sort of thicker paper stock.
Can I make this my pick of the week?
I almost did. All right,
we'll get to that after this as well.
Okay, so we're both keeping Dead Man, it sounds like.
I enjoy Dead Man, yes.
Okay. All right, so Wonder Woman and the Furies.
This is my pick of the week.
Really? Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning, Scott Clark. Wow. Yes. I will concur with you. Not that it was pick of the week, but it was strong.
Yes.
It was super strong.
This was the best Flashpoint-related book I've read.
Yeah.
Including the book Flashpoint itself. This was basically the story of Wonder Woman and Aquaman meet as, not kids, but teenagers, I guess. They decide to arrange a marriage to bring the Atlanteans and the Amazonians together. And
again, very Games of Thronesian.
And then factions within both the Atlanteans and the Amazonians don't want this marriage to happen, so they assassinate Wonder Woman's mother on the day of the wedding and causes a rift. And it was very political, and it was very actually Game of Thronesy. It was very sort of intrigue, and there was violence and fighting, but mostly about the political intrigue of putting these two houses together.
Yeah.
And this tells you how the war starts, because they frame Garth or Aqualad as the killer, but it really was what's her name?
Artemis.
Artemis,
and she wasn't aiming for Hippolyta or whatever; she was aiming for Wonder Woman.
Yeah. So they framed Garth. Garth is dead. He's been. Everyone thinks he tried to kill Wonder Woman or did kill Hippolyta and probably butchering that name. But it was really good, really good.
So I'm going to keep it because I love getting the history, the backstory, and it gives a better context into what's going on in Flashpoint. So I'm going to stick with it.
And it's nice to see Abnett and Lanning can not just do really good cosmic Marvel stories, but now you can see they can do lots of other interesting good stuff.
They're great writers. Yeah, they're so good. All right, so on to what personally I think is the best Flashpoint book as of yet, and I think Josh will agree with me.
Pick of the week.
Grodd of War.
I liked Invincible a lot, but Grodd of War was easily my pick of the week. This is the best villain one-shot I've seen since Jason Aaron's Penguin issue.
Yeah.
Now, this was a different kind of scale because they got to be in a world of its own. There was also it was a sad, depressed, suicidal Grodd who can't find anyone to kill him or beat him.
Yeah. And he's taken over all of Africa. He's got no one left to fight. No one could even come close to fighting him.
The comment in the middle that he took care of Africa and no one cares.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just like it's the forgotten continent that nobody cares about. And he's sarcastic. Now we rule over the continent. Great.
Yep. And also that combined with the fact that he rides in a limo and like has a big villa, he's standing on the veranda of his villa. Like it was just like, oh, yes.
It was a little middle management skull in that sort of slump he had there.
Yeah. it was great. I love monkeys as people.
Iguara, I mean, when we saw him on the Pet Avengers, we said, oh, this guy's got a whole career in front of him, and we're seeing it right now.
I'm super upset that this is not a miniseries, that this is just a one-shot.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, it was a really good one-issue story. And
But
it ends on a cliffhanger if we're going to go invade Europe now. So I guess that'll come into the main story. But
yeah. And it was never spoken of again. And then one day Brian Bendis will just fob us off when we try to ask about it. I didn't even do that book. Don't worry about it. If you can follow that, by the way, you've really been paying attention to our programming.
This was very good too.
Grodd was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was a strong contender for pick of the week. It really was.
I was really thrilled that
that might have blown people's minds if you'd chosen it.
It might have. And I definitely did think about it. I love the art.
Pat did Ron Richards' curveball pick.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the is it Malabar who's just like, yes. Is that okay? He's like that guy from The Phantom Menace.
Yes.
We have no army. Cy-Bibble?
Yeah, C-O-Bibble.
C-O-Bibble. Oh, he's the worst.
Oh, he such a bad attitude.
Yeah, no, he was always the naysayer. He's like, "But you can't do that." Anyway,
and then there was the pilot. It was just like,
"Oh, yeah, Rick Oley." I have seven Rick Oley action figures.
You remember who Rick Oley was?
He was the pilot, right?
Wayne's World 2. He was the roadie.
Oh, was he really?
Ozzy said we had to go get him Breen M&Ms.
That's Rick Oley.
And it turned out there was a Bengal tiger. Yeah. Oh. That was him.
All right, then. So let's give you this kind of show.
End of that one episode of Game of Thrones where the guy's like, I told you not to trust me. And
oh, that was excellent,
that
too.
That was amazing. Oh. That was great. Oh. Yeah.
Good show. Good show.
Yeah. The last series is Legion of Doom, number one, a three-issue series. Adam Glass, Rodney Buscemi. Connor, what did you think of Legion of Doom?
Not very good.
Not very good at all.
Not very good, but it had one interesting concept, which was basically the cliffhanger, but as the whole, not very good. It was written very cliched, very... Yeah. The main character in this is Heatwave, who in the beginning attacks Firestorm after he's split into his two beings, kills one of them, goes to prison. But the whole beginning is he's talking like the opposite of Mr. Freeze in the Schumacher Batman movie, where everything is a heat-related cliche.
And also, as much as I love the Super Friends, but to see the prison was actually the Legion of Doom headquarters design, I was like, oh, really? The mushroom, you know, I was like, really?
I did like the idea of planning an escape from the prison by having someone sneak Plastic Man in, and him coming out, and then which was gross. But
that was the only good part of it.
That was an interesting concept, but I'm not going to continue on with the series because I didn't like the whole.
All right, so it looks like we're on the same page: keeping Dead Man, keeping Wonder Woman, wanting more Grodd, and not keeping Legion of Doom. So there's your Flashpoint scorecard for this week. But I got to admit, it was this is probably the strongest of the Flashpoint weeks.
Yes, between those three issues. Yeah. Now, do we talk about Justice League Subway Famous Fans now, or
sure? Let's why not? We got some time.
1 of 4.
At no point in this does Aquaman is he shown on his feet?
Yeah.
he's laid out in everyone, or sitting at least.
Now the thing is that, like, I know, I mean, this is easy for us to make fun of, and
I'm not gonna really make fun of it. I thought it was fun.
I just liked when Michael Strahan on the second page says, "Whoa, hey guys, look," and he's got the sandwich in his fist.
Oh, I like the next part where he's like, "I haven't finished my sandwich yet."
This is the insert. This was in every DC book. It's an advertisement, much like the other one, the one we had last month for the movie, whose name I can't remember.
Super 8.
Super great. We're doing this in the morning, so
afternoon.
Justice League. So this is a 5-page ad for Subway food, and you know what? I liked this because it was reminiscent, of course, of the old Hostess cover.
Yes, ad. Yeah. I had the
and
same
those
thought.
Old ads were stupid, and they were dumb, but they were fun, and I have fond memories of them. So in this instance, I had similar fond feelings for it.
You read it every time you get to it, right, all the way through.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, it was stupid. Yes, it was written very much as an advertisement, not as a story, but I didn't care. It made me feel good about that, you know, remembering those things. So
what I liked was
the art was pretty good, actually.
When they're fighting Black Manta, and Black Manta realizes that they're not going to win, and Black Manta says, "I've had enough of this, but I'm not leaving empty-handed," and he's got a sandwich.
And then they take it from him.
The story is at the Pro Bowl in Hawaii, three football players, Jason Tuck, Michael Strahan, and the guy whose first name I can't pronounce, go off to get some Subway sandwiches while wearing Subway t-shirts and walking the beach. They see some minions of Black Manta have subdued Aquaman. So they go fight the minions, and then Justice League shows up and they all beat the minions. So,
I also thought the Wonder Woman asking the players, "Hey guys, mind if I wrap up that package for you?" A little weird.
Hey, B. Clay Moore has done the best-selling comic book of 2011.
Possibly. Quite possibly, yeah.
I think so.
All right. So it seems like a good time as any as we're talking about advertisements to thank the fine folks at Graphically for continuing to allow us to do this every week.
don't listen.
As you've heard us talk about in previous shows and you've seen on the website, you know, ifanboy.com works with the digital comics organization site Graphically, graphically.com. You might have noticed that the brand new website launched last week. Super fantastic new clean design. Hopefully you're as impressed by as I was when I first saw it. Now you can, you know, read comics on the web really easily. The whole library is there. You've got if you register and create an account, you have a profile. You can add your friends. You can see what your friends are reading. You can click on the embed code and take the comic you're reading, throw it on your site or your blog, share it with other folks. It's really, really cool. If you want to try it out, check out Rest from Top Cow, which is a Milo Ventimiglia produced comic book, and it's totally free on Graphically. We're going to be releasing each issue every week, and so currently right now, issue Zero and Issue 1 are currently free, and the other issues are coming soon. So go to Graphly.com and check that out. The search function, I don't know if you guys have played with it yet, but the search function is like to die for now. Like, you type in anything, it comes up with the characters, creators, the books. Like, you can find stuff really easily.
I don't go on the internet.
Nice. We've got over 4,000 comics from Marvel, Top Cow, Boom, IDW, Archaea, tons of publishers, tons of great stuff in there, as well as the website. You can get it on your Android phone or your iPhone or your iPad or your Android tablet device. I have apps on all those platforms. And be sure to follow Graphly on Twitter at twitter.com/graphically and check out the new website at graphly.com.
Okay, I want to make one suggestion that they can go look at. Rob Williams is sort of the new go-to exclusive guy at Marvel. We just put up Class War.
Yes.
That he wrote. First issue's free, and the other ones are 99 cents. Go get this, man.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really
Travel
good.
Foreman and, I forget the other artist, but like great
artist. Did
Leonard
Kirk work on it? Or?
Maybe.
Yeah. It was a British book, so yeah. British publisher, yeah. So.
But I mean, that's just a damn good deal, and that's just a book that I've been hearing about forever. I'm really glad to actually get a chance to read it that way, so there you go.
Were there any Subway sandwiches in that book?
I don't think so.
Not too bad.
Am I the only one hungry for Subway sandwiches right now?
No, I ate lunch already because it's the afternoon.
All right.
I swore off Subway long ago.
All right, so moving on. So as the X-Men inches forward to Schism, we got X-Men Prelude to Schism number 3.
It's not the book, but it's going to be.
Yeah. This was written by Paul Jenkins, which I know is a bit of a notorious name in the comic industry now. This wasn't half bad. This was actually...
You've been enjoying it all the way through.
I have been. I really have been. This focused on Cyclops and him trying to make the decision as to what they're going to do with this threat that's coming, and you had a lot of infighting between the X-Men, like management team, like the key leaders in the team, as well as Cyclops, you know, like kind of doing some flashbacks to when his powers manifested, and it starts off with like an internal monologue, and he's talking to someone, and you could tell that it's somebody that he cares a lot about, and I immediately just assumed it was Jean, but turns out it's his mother. Focusing on the when he got pushed out of the plane and the parachute and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, we know a lot about Cyclops' father, of course, here, but we don't know a lot about his mother. So I thought it was a nice little angle. And then ultimately they decided to defend Utopia. So that was the decision. So
when does Jean come back and they just stop fooling around with the teasing constantly for the last 10 years?
I don't know. No, I don't even think it was teasing. I don't think that was meant. I think that was just me bringing my own baggage to it. It wasn't like it was supposed to be Jean, and then I just made that assumption.
You know that when they talk about some woman important to him.
Yeah.
Back, it's everyone's going to assume it's Jean.
Yeah, right. But then that also leads into Uncanny X-Men number 538, which is the last issue of the Break World kind of storyline and the Break World coming back. And this was just fantastic. If anybody doubts Kieran Gillen on the X-Men, read this issue because he wrote a lot of the characters, wrapped up the story really well. It had that great kick-ass kind of moment, great fight. And now Kitty Pryde now is fully back. She's no longer has to wear the helmet anymore. She can speak again. Resolve that issue and just end it. It was just so much fun. This actually was – I was almost at the pick of the week. I'm like, oh, this is good. So, but I can't gush. I've been gushing about the X-Men too much, so I held back a little.
Oh, I'm really excited about the next book. And I'm sure a lot of people are too. Connor?
It's not me. I
really?
Didn't put it on the list.
Oh, well, I put it for both of us. You can take it. Take it.
No, I didn't read it.
You didn't read it?
Oh.
Oh, my God. Archie and Friends, number 156?
No, I only read the new Archie stuff.
Oh, man.
I only read the Archie, the Archie in the future married to the girls story.
Oh, I just assumed you'd pick this up because this was a special one-shot issue that featured Archie and Friends as well as Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Josie and the Pussycats, and that Wilkin boy because they're all attending the Riverdale Comic-Con.
Oh, nice.
And this was a lot of fun. I mean, there was a lot of inside con jokes in there about Comic-Cons and a lot of little tongue-in-cheek stuff, people in costumes and things like that.
Was
it
all the one story through the whole issue?
Yeah, it was the whole one story throughout the entire issue, yeah.
Oh, then I'll probably go back and get it.
Yeah, I would strongly advise it. Basically, there's a costume contest at the con, so they're all in costume, and there's this mysterious Optimus Prime-like guy who nobody knows who he is, and that's the big mystery is who it actually is. And then, randomly, J.J. Abrams was in the book. He was the judge of the costume contest, and it turns out, they gave the award to the Optimus Prime, but turns out to be a robot, and so the fact that he's a robot means that who's going to win, and the prize was that J.J. Abrams was going to give everybody free movies and free food, was going to give the winner that, and so J.J. Abrams goes, how about everybody wins? And the gang goes, everyone, and he goes, sure, free movies and meals on me forever.
Forever?
Yes, forever.
That's a significant portion of the income to deal with food.
Especially jugheads.
You sure you want to go out again? Yeah, J.J. Abrams got this. Let's go. We should really live it up at Chili's.
Yeah, exactly.
Our seats this
and
month.
Then I was just like, can you really just put J.J. Abrams in a comic?
Apparently. Yeah. He's a public figure.
Yeah. So anyway, J.J. Abrams.
That's quite a prize.
It's not like it. It's not like it was defaming of his character, unless people are going to suddenly in droves start coming up to him and be like, where's my meal, bitch?
Is it free movies, like all movies, or just his movies?
I don't know. Didn't clarify. There wasn't an asterisk.
I would like to go see Super 8 for free.
I'd see anything for free. Well, that's, wow.
I wouldn't see anything for
free. All right, anyway, moving on.
Next up, did you guys both leave Hulk?
No, I stayed with it because I found out Gabe's coming back after this issue, so I stuck with
it. I'm out. Yeah. You know, I'll read when Hartman comes back.
I liked this. I don't know why. I felt like I was reading a comic from the 70s, and it was just kind of goofy and fun, and I like Red Hulk. I like General Ross and his just like his military mind that was brought to this little sort of warring planet, and they're like, you guys are all stupid, and he just sort of fixes it, and it's over. You know, it was just like a little.
I just don't understand why.
I liked the explanation. I don't know. It's just like a little Watcher stuff. Like ever since he punched the Watcher, everything's been wrong.
Yeah, well, I did like that. The Watcher's like you're following the same steps the Banner did, including an exile to space, which I was like, oh, that's a
I just think there was a lot of really clever things going on underneath the surface of what seemed like a pretty sort of dumb story.
Yeah.
And I like that. Like at the end, it was explained well enough so that I don't usually like it when everything gets explained like that. But, you know, it never happened, but it did happen. Like it felt like a comic from another time, and I had fun with it.
Yep.
A Superman Batman number 85. Connor, did you read this?
No.
No?
No.
It's just another one of those throwbacky sort of stories.
Enjoy it while you can.
Well, exactly. The thing that I'm realizing about Superman Batman is it's the two biggest superhero characters in the world, and this is their indie book.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like their tryout book that they have going. Body washes up and is a reporter from Metropolis, and he's figured out Batman's identity. And so the Daily Planet sends Clark to go follow up on the story and rescue it, and Batman's acting really erratic and torches a bunch of the evidence, and everybody thinks Batman killed him, and I mean, it's a little bit, you know what it felt like? It felt like a sort of slightly hardcore version of the Superman animated series with Batman guest starring. Like, mm-hmm. It was just like, why won't you let me help you? And he said, leave me alone, Clark. I'm fine. My city. And he just sort of flies off. And there's this like almost slight overuse of the Batman or Superman disappearing from whoever they're talking to thing. Mm-hmm. But it's always fun. I think if you write Batman, you kind of have to do it once. You have to get it out of your system. It was a fun little story, and it sort of, because it wasn't encumbered by all that continuity, I suppose. You don't have to worry about it. Well, you can't. Well, that's not right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's been. Well, they've tried a lot of different things with Batman Superman, mm-hmm. right? And it's all over the map. It's a series, it's been all over the map.
Totally. But I had fun with it.
Well, enjoy it while you can, because it's going away come September.
Mm. That's fine. It's been 85 issues. It's really
I'm surprised it went that long. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not. It sells really well because Superman and Batman, but it's not really a big loss.
But it's funny where it started and where it is now. I mean, it was Loeb and McGinnis. Like, it was as big and commercial as you could get.
Wow, that was a long time ago. I bought it back then.
85 issues ago.
Yeah, jeez. Anyway, so those are the books that came out that we enjoyed. Go to iFanboy.com/comics where you can see all the books that came out this past week. And you all in the iFanboy community bought a bunch of your books, and you came back to iFanboy.com and gave your ratings and your reviews and wrote some reviews and did your picks of the week. So we want to highlight what you've been enjoying. And we're recording this very early in the week. The day of the week. We're actually recording this on Thursday, just so you know. So these are the picks of the week, the top five pick of the weeks as of Thursday. It's probably changed by the time you hear this on Sunday, just so you know. Little behind the curtain action going on.
100 people are going, well, why can't you just release it now? Because it's a schedule, damn it.
Yeah, so this is a rough week, okay? Let's leave it at that. All right, so in the number five top pick of the week was Power Girl number 25, with 7% of the iFanboy community made it their pick of the week. And we're going to hear a little more about Power Girl in a bit. Number four, surprisingly, was Northlanders number 41 at 11%, which I was impressed by. Apparently other people are enjoying the art as well, or the story, just everything, the comic. I'm going to stop talking now. Number three is Batgirl number 22 with 14%. Another book to enjoy while you can. Brian Q. Miller's run on Batgirl coming to an end. 14% of you enjoyed it and made it your pick of the week. Number two shocked me. Godzilla, Gangsters, and Goliath. That's number one. 16% of the iFanboy community made that their pick of the week.
That was John Layman on writing it.
Yeah. Paul highlighted that in the light week, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because you were still in jail. Okay.
Yep.
And
they don't have internet access in jail.
No, and especially in Mexico.
No, not in Mexican jail at all.
And finally,
Great coffee though.
The number one pick of the week according to that Fanboy community this week, a rare case of agreeing with one of us. Invincible number 80 at 31% pick of the week.
If you say that every week, then rare is really not used correctly.
True, I know, but it is rare.
It hasn't been every week at all.
It was last week. You said the same thing.
So. Oh, really? I'm sorry. Well, it's very rare. Normally, when I make the pick, I'm way off. I'm like 11.
You.
Yeah.
Who you're talking to, buddy.
Anyway, so that was the top five picks of the week, according to you, the audience. And now we got some reviews. And first one is Power Girl number 25.
Boomer Girl reviewed it. She gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And as Ron said, 7% of the people made it the pick of the week. And Boomer Girl says, "Darn you, Winnick. He never fails to make me cry. This issue is fantastic, and it's writing and art like this that makes the news of this series cancellation in a bitter taste in my mouth. These panels of the Power Girl fighting an actual hurricane were spectacular, but then again, this title has delivered when it comes to the amazing art. I'm sad when I'm left to wonder if this little nugget of potential awesome will make it into the DC reboot come September somehow, though I'd highly doubt it. P.S. This is Bruce Batman in here, too."
No one disagrees, right?
I can't. I think that Winnick is the first one to significantly make me cry with a comic book.
Wow.
Like, it was Pedro and me, right?
Yeah. I can't think of one before that.
This was his last issue. Sturgis is coming on to sort of wrap up the series. Final two issues.
Like, put her down.
This really should have been the final issue. There really is.
It would have been a nice place to end, yeah.
It was a nice ending. It was Winnick wrote it as an ending because it was his ending. So there was a nice final sort of wrap up to the whole character at the end. And it really, there's no need to continue on after this issue.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm not surprised. People are upset. It didn't sell a lot.
Then that's really the answer to all of these.
Yeah, exactly.
We got two solid, really solid, better than solid, you know, great years out of this character that never would have thought we would have gotten two great years out of. So that's, to me, is a bonus. And yeah, it sucks, but a lot of things suck, and you know, move on to more books. Yeah.
Moving on.
Next up, Backhawks said of Doctor Who number 6. I feel like there are a lot of Doctor Who comics right now. Gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and nobody picked it as their pick of the week percentage. Said, "I will admit that I was going to drop this. What with the DC reboot and other expenses, I need to cut back on my pull list. And it's not that the book isn't good. Quite to the contrary. Tony Lee is one of the best Doctor Who writers in any medium. His dialogue reads just the way it should, and his plots are interesting enough that you want to see what happens next. The only sore spot is the other one in this otherwise exemplary run is that for some reason IDW is constantly pairing him with artists that leave much to be desired. Much to my surprise, this arc, the artist is Matthew Dow Smith. Of all the artists in IDW's run with Doctor Who, he's really the breakout. His style is very reminiscent of Mignola and evokes the feel of the show and the look of the actors without being too photorealistic. After this arc, I may switch over to trades, but for now, I'm loving this." So don't drop it for books that you don't even know about yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Why? Don't do that.
Yeah. Why'd you do that?
You know what? I watch the show. I'm a fan of it. But for some reason, I can't get into Doctor Who comics. I don't know why.
Have you tried?
Yeah, I've tried to read a couple. Matthew Dow Smith is very good, although I think he avoids drawing feet. Let's see if I get email about that. But if you read the art, which is noticeable because like the last one, he always wore Converse All-Stars. You could totally see, like, it was like, where are the feet? But Tony Lee's the guy who's been doing this for a really long time, and I actually really like Dow Smith's style. It's cartoony, but it's sort of it does evoke the characters very well. I think it's a really good time to be a Doctor Who fan, but I just like the TV version of it for whatever reason.
All right, cool. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and do your pull list every week and come back and rate your comics and write a review, and you might make it on the show. Connor, book of the month time.
This month's book of the month, it is June, I believe.
Yes, yes, that is correct.
June's book of the month at iFanboy is The Flash Omnibus by Geoff Johns, Volume 1. And it is – DC's really jumped on the Omnibus bandwagon. You're going to see a lot of these the next year,
as they should. I mean, like, this particularly the comics in this book, how many years have we been wanting to recommend this, the Johns' run on the Flash, to people? It just wasn't in print.
Yep. So you're gonna see stuff like Johns' Teen Titans, you're gonna see the original Perez Wolfman Teen Titans, you're gonna see John, basically anything Johns wrote. Johns' Hawkman's coming out, so
Connor,
a lot of Omnibus or Omnibi or Omniboo are coming out. So let's talk,
Connor,
about
is your floor gonna be okay?
I have to reinforce the floor.
I'm a little worried.
I did have to reinforce the bookshelf. The bottom shelf. Well, the bottom.
I'm not surprised. That's going to be the death of you. You realize that.
I talk about that on my carpentry show, which we'll
it's going to be a New York one. Nerdy recluse in Brooklyn killed by bookshelf.
You're really good at that.
I love it.
All right, so Flash. Let's talk about Flash. Flash is...
I don't think you're a nerdy recluse, but that's what the press would
that's
think.
What they'll say. That's the joke, isn't it? We're not hipsters either, but that's also perfect.
Pathetic loser crushed by books. Hey. Coming up after the break. First, weather on the ones.
Sorry.
In the same package for 15 minutes, and then we're doing
slightly
it.
Sunny. Chance of rain.
Oh, boy. So Flash. Flash was one of the really important books in my comic life because it was one of the books that got me going to the store weekly. When Flash, my friend and I went to the store and I bought Flash number 49. And this is before Johns, before Wade. This is back in the Messner-Loebs era. And 49 came out, and at the end, they were like, they teased a big thing in 50 because, you know, it's a 50th issue. So my friend and I were like, oh, we better go back and get 50 when it comes out. And that's when I started realizing I had to start going every week.
And that's when it started.
Yeah, that's basically when it started.
These come out again?
And so at that time, I just sort of buy random issues. And then this is the first time I started going like consecutively to buy issues in a row.
Idiot boy has revelation.
So then after Messner Loeb left, then there was some other – there may have been other people. And then Wade came on. And Wade's run was really my sort of favorite Flash run of all time. I think it went 5 years.
Wade
like
and Brian Augustine? Augustine.
It went 5 years, which led to Geoff Johns coming on at a very young age. He was in his 20s at the point. He was basically just breaking into comics. He came on for, I think he did 3 years or 2 years. And this collects that run. And just since Johns is the hot writer, he gets the omnibus. Wade is not the hot writer at DC, so he's not going to get an omnibus. But this is still really good Flash comics. I know this is Ron's favorite run on Flash.
Yeah.
This is basically a comprehensive collection of Johns' run. Now, I've mentioned in my review on I'm Fanboy that the first arc is actually not that great. But they collect as, you know, it's comprehensive, so it's collected in the book and it actually kicks off the book. It involves Flash actually waking up in an alternate world where there's no Flash.
Wait a minute.
And Barry Allen is there. So that's not, it's okay, but really the second arc where Collins comes on is where this book really kicks off.
Yep.
And it's that old Collins style that we love. It really, Collins, as much as Johns was responsible for making this book special, he really created an environment and a world, and he made Keystone a character. They turned Keystone into the blue-collar capital of the DCU. It looks like a city, like Opal looks like a city, like Gotham has its own flavor. Mm-hmm. Keystone really was unique under Collins and Johns. And once Collins comes on board in this omnibus, it's really, really good.
It comes to life almost, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ron, you got this omnibus, right? Did you read through it or not?
Yeah, no. I have these all in issues, but I got the omnibus and I was able to revisit it again. And I haven't. I didn't sit down and read the whole thing, but I kind of sampled here and there. And it's just there was such an energy and a like, and it's so ironic given what's recently happened with Johns and his like mission to bring back Barry. And you get I get the sense that Geoff is a bigger Barry than Wally fan. And yet
he totally is. And actually reading through this now, knowing that, you can see it.
Yeah. Oh, really? Interesting. Maybe I can need to
Barry pops up a lot, either in flashbacks or memories or talking about Barry.
But what's interesting is that it totally made me fall in love with Wally as a character. Like, I just – you remember at this time? Like, I named my fantasy baseball team after Keystone City. Like, I was all about this run, and it was great. So it's great to see it get a nice hardcover treatment, and finally I can give it to people to go check it out. So.
Is the whole run in this book?
No.
Well, no. This is a volume one.
Okay, that was my question.
This is, you know, the first 17 issues or whatever it is.
Okay. How many books
are
going to
be? Probably 4 volumes, I'd say. 4 or 5
Is it
volumes.
Is it big like a Starman omnibus?
Yeah,
or is it?
Yeah, it's about the same size. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
All of these are going to be about that size. All these omnibus that DC are going to put out. They're not the Marvel-style complete omnibus, but they're the Starman style.
Right.
But it really, if you're a Flash fan, if you're a Wally fan, I know there's a lot of Wally fans out there, the ones that are upset that he's nowhere to be found in the DC reboot. And you haven't read the John stuff, this is great Wally West Flash John stuff.
Read one per month.
Yeah.
There you go. I mean, it'll be like he's coming out with books now.
Yeah.
There's a great story in here. I remember, Ron, the great thing about this run was all the great supporting cast and characters. It almost wasn't about Wally.
Yep.
Exactly. Even though Wally was great in the book, it was about the cops. It was about Linda. It was about Jay and his.
There was such a rich cast, yeah. Totally.
And it was about that whole evil prison in Keystone and the evil warden who ran it that they kept all the rogues in. And it was a really well fleshed out world. The thing that Johns does is he creates this whole. You know, he did in JSA too. He creates this whole sort of tapestry of characters that sort of enrich the entire experience, and that's what he did here. He reinvented all the rogues, and all the rogues became sort of deadlier. It was a really great 8 years between Wade and Johns on Flash.
Yeah,
where it was one of the best superhero books in the market.
And when everybody wonders why we freaked out when it went bad, this is why, because we had it so good for so long.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't want to use cliches. It's hard to not use cliches when you're talking about Flash, but I flew through this book. You know, it was so.
I don't get it.
It was so good that I didn't want to stop reading it. And it's a thick book. It's 400 plus pages, and I just didn't want to put it down because the world that Johns, especially after the first arc. The first arc was slow to get through, but after that, the familiar world that I remember from Johns' run is created, and it's really just wonderful to read. And I, as Ron said, these books you couldn't get trades of these issues. There were trades, but they were out of print. This is a good way for me to revisit the books I love because I'm not, you know, diving into my back issues anymore. Yeah. So the Flash Omnibus by Geoff Johns, Volume 1, the very awkwardly titled Omnibus, is great if you're a Flash fan, if you're a Geoff Johns fan. If you've never read this run, or you only heard about it in the past, or heard about it in the present, never read it in the past, it's a great run on Flash. And if you're a Wally fan and you miss Wally, this is you got to get it.
This is why, I mean, this is one of the big reasons why Geoff Johns is Geoff Johns. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where that sort of started for him.
Good stuff. Pick it up.
Cool. Awesome. All right, then. So go to ifanboy.com and you can check out Connor's review, and it's a good review. So let's go into the
review. We really failed at the end of that whole segment there, didn't we?
Yeah, the transition, the segues are a little rough these
good
days.
Good thing.
Anyway,
yeah.
Good things. All right, so another good thing are emails. Onto our emails and voicemails. Our first email comes from Anthony, who has a question about, wants to know, in our opinion, which is the better writing team, Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, or Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning?
Why do we have to choose?
I know. That's such a tough call.
They're different.
They do different things.
Now the thing is that I'm a big fan of Abnett and Lanning, mm-hmm. but I will admit that I think Palmiotti and Gray have shown more range.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But then again, we don't know that they don't have the range, Abnett and Lanning. They just haven't.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, they've done other genres, I think. But I think that we've seen Abnett and Lanning do all sorts of kinds of books. And the other thing that Palmiotti and Gray haven't done that Abnett and Lanning have is a giant, huge arc. If you look through all that stuff they did from Annihilation onward, I mean, that's a big story. And the stuff, like, they're funny. They're funnier. I think Abnett and Lanning are funnier.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely true. Palmiotti and Gray might be a little more twisted.
Yep. Yep. I agree. A little darker.
I wouldn't pick between them.
I don't think they want to do that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's fine.
They want to do a lot of different things.
No, that's, I mean, like, they excel at the single issue more than anything. And I wouldn't, you know, they're both very different. I'm glad that we have both of them. I ain't picking one.
I'm not picking one either. I think they're great that we have both of them. But they definitely have different sensibilities. Let's just say that.
So I'd be like American. You choose between Josh and Ron.
Well, that's easy.
Do it.
That's easy.
Well, if we're bribing him, yeah.
All right, so if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com and onto the voicemail. You can also call our voicemail line. And our first question has a very astute observation.
Hi, guys. This is Daryl from Chandler, Arizona. My question is, I'm reading X-23 currently, and it's a great run. I was wondering, why isn't there any more Marvel women that are being written by itself? For instance, maybe like a Storm. Why is she so much in the background lately? Anyway, keep up the great work, and can't wait to hear your next podcast. Thanks.
So this is really weird that he called in, because I had a conversation last week very similar to this topic, which really made me think. And if you're not following along on the comics media internet cycle, there's a lot of people have been not complaining, but observing that the number of female creators at DC went down with the relaunch. Like, there's not many females working about comics. And that led to a conversation about females in comics. And if you look at Marvel and DC, DC has Supergirl, Power Girl, Wonder Woman, all of these like female kind of roles. If you look at Marvel, other than females being on teams, they're nowhere.
Well, they're villains.
Yeah.
As we said, someone at Marvel hates women.
Yeah, I remember when I was talking about it. I went on the Comic Vine podcast last week, and this topic came up about how there's no book at Marvel with a woman in the lead. Like, yes, you've got Invisible Woman on FF, and you've got Storm in the X-Men, and you've got Ms. Marvel on the Avengers, but they're like, Ms. Marvel's book's gone, right?
Yeah. She got reduced to a miniseries.
Yep.
They don't sell.
Spider-Woman disappeared. Yeah, they don't sell.
Yeah, Spider-Girls are still around, but
the audience is 95% male, and I think I bet this is just a guess, but I bet that the audience for Marvel is a higher percentage of guys than girls.
But don't guys like chicks in small costumes?
And that's why you have them as evil or as like sidekicks, but never as the lead character. I think they don't buy them, and I'm not going to call that a bad word, but it's just like a preference that those kinds of readers have shown.
And meanwhile, we've seen some great, like, you know, Dan Slott's run on She-Hulk was awesome. It didn't sell. Mm-hmm. Didn't sell at all.
Yeah.
A lot of people said really good things about Brian Reed's run on Ms. Marvel. Didn't sell.
Right. It went pretty long.
Yeah, it did go.
Comparatively.
Yeah. But yeah, no. But it's interesting that the for some reason there's a but even then there's a, like, Wonder Woman is a clear, like, there will always be a Wonder Woman book because it's a strong kind of pantheon character. Marvel, I mean, do you count Invisible Woman and Storm as part of the pantheon of Marvel heroes?
No, because they're part of they don't exist as solo characters on their own.
Yeah,
in the same way that a Wonder Woman does, or Power Girl, or anything.
Yeah. I think you're right that Marvel seems to have more male fans. I think if you talk to, you know, female fans, they tend to read DC books because that's where the female characters are. Yeah. So is it a chicken and egg thing? Are there more? Are there less women reading Marvel?
Well, if you think about it, a title like Birds of Prey, you know, that survived for a really long, still survives for a really long time at DC. Yeah. You know, when they do it at Marvel, it's like a 2 month event.
And so then,
ladies are taking over.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, women, Marvel women. Yeah, but so then you layer in the other ironic aspect is DC with the stronger female characters, and then just cleaning house and getting rid of all the women that worked on the books, except for Gail Simone.
Well, the thing is, it's not. I mean, that's not exactly true.
No, I don't think that's done dry.
There are a lot more men who work in comics. There just are. And they have stronger followings. Like, you're trying to, the end of the day, they're trying to sell books.
Right.
So the people who are big fan favorites are mostly men. B, you know, like, I've heard there's, we don't know anything about the pitching process. We don't know that women weren't offered. I do know Kelly Sue DeConnick was offered books. Yep. You know, one book, she couldn't take it. She pitched for another one, didn't get it. You know, like, it's not.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I understand.
You know, obviously there's no master plan. You must remove the women from the process entirely. You know, that's not. I don't think that's happening.
I don't think anybody at DC has a German accent.
Do you know that for sure?
I don't know that for sure. That's true.
If you had stuck around in Bob Harris's office a little bit longer, do you know?
All right, it was good to see you guys. I'm just going to go here and just hide under the desk.
Is the one with the sideburns gone?
Anyway, so I mean, it's an interesting question, but a good observation nonetheless. And yeah, I honestly doubt Marvel cares. Marvel just cares about those sales numbers.
They don't care because they have 50% of the market as of May.
Yep, they don't need to. Anyway, so if you have any questions, any observations, you can call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
Now, we have a Green Lantern podcast this week. It'll be behind this show on the feed. You can find it on fanboy.com. You can find it on iTunes or anywhere you get the podcast. It'll be behind this one. We haven't seen it yet. This is Thursday we're recording.
So there's great potential for this podcast. Let's leave it at that.
Assuming the way things are going, this might be one of those podcasts like Wanted or... You know, so you might want to tune in for that.
Could be Jonah a good time. Hex. Jonah Hex.
I don't think it's going to be Jonah Hex.
I don't think it'll be a G.I. Joe there's level
nothing,
either.
There's
yeah.
nothing that...
I don't think G.I. Joe was that bad.
Anyway.
So tune in for the Green Lantern Special Edition podcast, which will be on FM, but it will be on iTunes. It'll be on all places you listen to the podcast.
If that's not enough podcasting for you, you can come back on Monday and check out our iFanboy Don't Miss. This week, I'm going to be talking to writer and artist David Hahn, who's got All Nighter number one coming from Image Comics. And
it's just about being very tired.
No. If you know me and you know in the letter column a couple weeks ago, I was lamenting the lack of relationship comics and stuff like that. This is totally scratching that itch. And so it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. So check out Don't Miss. It's got a separate feed in iTunes. So go search for iFanboy Don't Miss in iTunes and subscribe to it, and you can also check it out on iFanboy.com come Monday. And while you're at iFanboy.com, check out my Pick of the Week review of Invincible number 80, as well as all the great articles and posts that are there throughout the week. Another strong week, tons of Green Lantern stuff, but not too much. I think we just had the right balance. Some great analysis of the DC relaunch this week as well. I thought we really stepped it up in these recent weeks, gentlemen. I'm impressed.
Giving us something to work with.
Yeah, so if you're not going to iFanboy.com every day and reading the posts or subscribing to the RSS feed, go do that. It helps us out. It's good to be heard. And you can also check out, like we said, all the great podcasts we have, Word Balloon every week as well as our video show, which comes out every Wednesday. So last week we had an episode talking about Green Lantern and some of the hyping up the movie, which I'm sure, you know, was worthwhile. But it was a good discussion of the various Green Lanterns.
Well, as the characters who've been Green Lantern besides Hal Jordan. So
exactly. And then this week we're going to be talking about the DC relaunch as if we haven't enough. But you're going to get to hear the words coming from our mouth as we analyze what's going on.
You hear the words that are coming out of my mouth.
That's what I was thinking too.
So check that out on Wednesday.
You can email us at contact@fanboy.com. You can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. Any comments, questions, concerns, discussion topics to get in this show, get in the video show, just sort of amuse us as we listen to your voicemails during the day. Yep. All kinds of things you can do with that.
If you like us or don't, I guess you could, we have to take it either way. Go write a review of this show or the Don't Miss show or the video show over in iTunes. That's we're going towards 1,000. That's what we're doing. We're marching towards it. But go in there, tell us what you think. Rate it via the star system. Other than that, you know, one thing you can do is just to tell your friends about it. Tweet about the show. Post it on Facebook. Spread it around. If this is a good one, let people know that it exists and it's a part of your comic book experience. We really appreciate that.
Comic book experience.
It's a comic book experience. That's our new
tagline.
Should
be our new tagline.
Exactly. Yes. Our catchphrase. All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I got a lot riding on this.
So make your sirens call and sing all you want. I will not hear what you have to say. Cause I need freedom now and I
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.